Okay, Ken, I'm going to ask you a hard question now, finally. The Buddha said that there were four indeterminate questions that couldn't be answered. Now, granted, this was 2,600 years ago, before modern science, etc. But I want to know if you can answer these indeterminate questions, and if your model answers them or leaves them open. So the first question was whether the world is eternal or not eternal. He said, you know, these four questions, they can't be answered. It's a waste of time. Move on. Eternal or not eternal?
Yes. As Yogi Berra said, when you come to a fork in the road, take it. The inexpressibles are taken to be the foundation of what eventually became Nagarjuna's doctrine of emptiness that we were talking about.
The inexpressibles are these four indeterminate questions.
Yes.
You know what all four of them are, you know, whether the world is finite or infinite, whether the soul and body are identical or different, whether the enlightened one exists after death or does not exist after death.
I don't want to dodge the question, but let me tell you why it's important that, no, you can't answer them. Not like that. But Zen would say you have to answer them, and therefore you must say something. And it actually all hangs together, certainly for Buddhism, and this aspect of Buddhism, I happen to agree with every single thing they say on it. Nagarjuna, recall, was the person that was one of the first non-dual realizers, philosopher sages, and one of the really greatest philosopher sages of the non-dual realization. In the West, comparable would be Plotinus, who was one of the first to have a truly profound non-dual philosophy that emphasized both ascending and descending. And for Nagarjuna, though, the foundation has to be emptiness. The foundation has to be any philosophy or any orientation you have, ultimately, because it's supposed to, in a sense, be free of all manifestation, all form, all suffering, all pain, it has to be so ultimate that you can't really even say anything about it. So it's very much like saying, for example, characterize the deep sleep state. When you're in that state, is it up or down? Is it left or right? Is it in or out? It's none of those things. None of those things really work for radical emptiness or radical formlessness. And if you say, well, it's the absence of all of those, but that's just an idea, a concept that you have in your mind. So you're seeing that word, it's an absence of those, as an object. But that's not what emptiness is. It's not that word. It's an absence of that. So Nagarjuna basically said, any position, well, he said basically there are two different types of truth. One is relative truth, and one is absolute or ultimate or non-dual truth. And relative truth is things like water contains hydrogen and oxygen. You can say that's true or false, and that's fine. Science works with that. That's fine. But then there's ultimate truth. And ultimate truth, you can say literally nothing about ultimate truth, including what I just said. And that's the basis of the Buddhist doctrine of emptiness, or the Madhyamaka doctrine of shunyata, which means emptiness, and which Nagarjuna came up with. So he codified it by saying, you can't say emptiness is A, or not A, or both, or neither. And those are based on the inexpressibles, going right back to Gautama Buddha. And Nagarjuna's interpretation of Buddha, which I agree with, is that Gautama Buddha was trying to convey this radical pure emptiness that can't even be grasped by the word emptiness. And this is not a philosophy or theory. It's a realization of who and what you are. It's a realization of the wetness of the ocean, or the oneness of everything, or the isness of everything. But you can't say it's one, because one only has meaning opposed to the many. And this includes everything. But you can't say it's both, because that only has meaning contrasted to that which is neither. And it's all of that. So you get an infinite regress when you try to describe the absolute or the ultimate. And therefore, you can say absolutely nothing about it, including these inexpressibles. Because those tap into ultimate realities. And since all words are dualistic, all concepts have meaning only in terms of their opposites, and yet reality is non-dual. It has no opposite. So you can say literally nothing about it. And that's the reason that's important, is you don't want to go and try and build a philosophy of non-duality, because you're going to have to use dualistic concepts to do so. And a lot of people get in trouble when they try to build a spiritual philosophy, because they try to give it a quality. They say it's the web of life, or it's everything intertwined in oneness. Those are all dualistic concepts. They have meaning only in terms of their opposite, and therefore they're partial and fragmented and broken, and they're not ultimate or non-dual. So Nagarjuna won't let you say anything about it, and neither will a Zen master. So that's the whole purpose of that, is to get you into a state of radical freedom and purity. So beyond concepts, you can't even begin to use them. That also can be a very simple state, though. The sun is rising, the rain is raining, the wind is blowing. That's a state of non-duality. But you can't say it's a state of non-duality, because then it becomes dualistic. So it's a very subtle but important point, because if you're going to have any philosophy, and I'm saying this with regard to my own work, if you're going to have any philosophy that deals with quadrants and levels and lines and all of that, that applies to relative truth. That applies to the manifest realm. That applies to the realm that we can make these comments about. But in addition to that, there's this vast emptiness, this vast unqualifiableness that can't even be indicated by the words I just used. And that's what the Madhyamaka position is. That's the inexpressibles that Gautama Buddha was getting across, because those are a realization, a direct living realization that cannot be put into words, no matter how highfalutin the words are. And so it's a constant warning that we have to have this as an awakened awareness, not a mere philosophy or a mere concept. And because those only make sense in terms of their opposites, you really can't say what an enlightened soul does before or after birth and so on, because that which is one with everything can't be conceptualized in any way whatsoever. And it can be known, but only with satori, not with any verbal expression. So no, the inexpressibles like that, no, that's the whole point. There is no answer to that. There is no answer to any ultimate question. The only answer to the ultimate question is, you must awaken. You must have the experience of satori. That's the answer. Well, what do you see in satori? I can't tell you, because all I can say is dualistic. So I literally cannot give answers to that. But you can find the answer yourself if you have satori.